Great white father said, "What you say, nigga?" Say, "Oh, we just want to know, Mr. White folks, if we can be the engine." "And that's why you the nigga, nigga. Wait here." Great white father went in the house to explain this super joke to the super white father. He said, "Come here, look at that nigga outside, that ignorant freak want to be the Indian." Super white father went to the window, looked out. He said, "Come here, white boy. That ain't no ordinary nigga out there. Look at him. What's that look like to you?" He said, "They all look alike to me." He said, "Well, I'm telling you, white boy, that ain't no ordinary nigga out there. Look at him, standing tall, lips all tucked in, Brooks Brothers suit on, Phi Beta Kappa Key from Harvard and Yale. That nigga look more like us than us. Tell that nigga to come in here. Come in, nigga." "Yes, sir." "Nigga, understand you want to be the Indian?" "Yes, sir." "Okay, nigga, you get the hell out of here. We make like it never happened." "No, sir, we want to be the Indian." "Nigga, do you know what we do to the Indian?" "Yes, sir." "Nigga, don't lie to me. You don't know what we do to the Indians, because if you did, you wouldn't want to be one." "Yes, sir, Mr. White folks, we know." "Nigga, I say, don't lie to me. Don't make me mad. Nigga, do you know we rape the Indian's woman, kill his kids, and burn his village?" "Yes, sir, Mr. White folks, told you we know you do that." "Nigga, what the hell you mean?" One day we showed up at the great white father's mansion. Well, we didn't go to the front door, we went to the back. And we sit out in the yard for about 3 days trying to get up enough nerve, you know. And lo and behold, he saw us. He said, "What you doing, nigga?" I said, "We don't want to be the Indian no more." He said, "You better get the hell out of that yard before I hurt you." I said, "Well, damn, man, you didn't do nobody else like that." But now, maybe we can't blame the great white father for not releasing us. Took us 10 years, a whole decade, before we could get released. But now that's not his fault when you stop and think about it. You see, when the Indian brother and the Jewish brother and the Irish brother and the Italian brother, when all of them decided they wasn't going to be the Indian no more, they left the women and kids in the village, and the men folks showed up at the great white father's mansion to inform him they were not going to be the Indian no more. Now, when black folks decided we wasn't going to be the Indian no more, the men stayed in the village and the women and kids went to the mansion. That's what the civil rights movement was all about. That's when the dogs was eating up the little kids and the fire hoses was getting thrown on the little kids. And in Birmingham, they arrested 2,000 kids one afternoon. And so naturally, the great white father thought we was just playing. So everybody else that didn't want to be the Indian, the men folks showed. Snotty-nosed juveniles, 10:30. Your mother know where you are. Get the hell on away from here. So for 10 years, and I guess we would have still been the Indian today, had it not been for, and thank God, for Stokely Carmichael and Rap Brown. Brother Rap and Brother Stokely taught us one good lesson. They say, "My brother, if you don't want to be the Indian no more, stop looking like him. Take the wall paint off your face. Get the feather out your cap. Throw them beads down. Get rid of that blanket. And my brother, when you stop looking like the Indian, then he'll know you're not going to be the Indian no more. Ain't no way in the world a hoe can lay in bed naked with a pimp talking about she ain't going to turn no more tricks. If she mean it, get up, put your clothes on. When you don't come back, he know he done lost you." So we listened to Brother Stokely. We listened to Brother Rapp. We stopped looking like the Indian. We let our hair grow out the way nature meant for it to grow. And if anybody don't like nappy hair, we say go to hell. We stopped being ashamed of our black face and stopped using all that old bleaching cream. We stopped tucking our lips in. "How come them niggas got such big lips?" "You know why. Man couldn't live without a little love, and all big lips mean is when I reach to kiss my lady, chances are I ain't gonna miss her." We stopped being ashamed of our wide nose. Wonder why them colored folks' noses is so wide. Ask nature. Man couldn't live without breathing in air. Ask nature why we can get that much more life than you. Yeah, every time you take a white cat to the hospital before they get him in the ambulance, got that oxygen over it. Yeah, one thing, that's $100 a day. Yeah. When old moles go to the hospital, we don't need no oxygen. Most they do is plug up one nose. We stopped looking like the Indian. We stopped being ashamed of the way we talked. I don't know why them colored folks don't apply themselves so they can learn how to speak English good like us white folks in America. You know, I wish I could get all you white folks on a jet plane and fly you to London, England, and let you listen to that Englishman talk, and then you find out you can't speak English neither. The only difference between you and me, we know we can't talk, and we know you can't talk. So what the hell we want to run around sounding like you for? You imagine a nigga running through the black ghetto talking about, gosh. Come on, yous guys. You know, you listen to those coloreds and you just can't understand what they're saying. We listen to you whites and we don't understand what you're saying. We don't make no big issue out of it because we feel you're doing the best you can. One day you white folks should listen to white folks talk, record it, and listen to it the next day and write it down and get your English dictionary and see how many words is not there. Jesus Christ, come on, Chucky, let's get some nookie. I just, what in the hell is nookie? I looked in every English dictionary for nookie. I found hookie, but not nookie. I'm 39 years old, been all the way around the world, and I still don't know what nookie is. Just sound like something I ain't never had and don't never want. I'd just be happy with my wife and 8 kids. Damn nookie, whatever it might be. And so we stopped looking like the engine. And after 10 years, the whole decade of the 60s, we finally got off from underneath his grip. We told him we wasn't going to be the Indian no more, and some of the most beautiful rhetoric that's ever been uttered in the history of man. We told him through Brother Malcolm, told him through Brother Martin, told him through Father Grappe, we told him through Jesse Jackson, Huey P. Newton. We told him through NAACP, the Urban League, SNCC, CORE, Eldridge Cleaver, Bobby Seale. We told him through Ralph Abernathy. And then one day, we got tired of them beautiful young black folks out there doing our work. And one day, we all got together and told him together, white boy, we ain't going to be your Indian no more. And he heard us. He heard us. That was a glorious day. 1969, the great white father decided to release us from being the Indian. And that's when we put him in the super trick, because we said we're not going to be your nigger no more neither. That created a dark shadow over America, because it was the first time in the history of America he'd never been without a nigger or an Indian until now. He'd had brief periods without Indians, but he always had the nigger to fall back on. That's why when you hear the news commentators talking about the turbulent 60s, he mean that's the decade you lost your nigger and your Indian. He had to start the decade of the 70s off without a nigger or Indian. A lot of people thought he would be all right. They thought psychologically he was well enough to make it. But you could look at him and tell he was still a cowboy. He just took them funny boots off, but the gun was under the gray flannel suit. I'll be honest with you, I was surprised the cowboy made January of 1970 without a nigger or an Indian. He made February, which surprised me, and that was a short month. He made March and he made April. He made 4 months without a nigger or Indian. And a lot of people say, I think he can make it. No, look at him, man. He's a cowboy. Can't say, I think he'll make it to June. I said, I hope he do. He didn't know. He made January, February, March, and April. And then it happened. May the 4th, 1970, the great white father held the biggest meeting ever held in the history of America. He said, we got to get us a nigger and an Indian today. They said, damn it, there's no more niggers and Indians left. He said, look down in the valley. Those are our new niggers. Those are our new Indians. Say, my God, those are our white kids. He said, they used to be. They're the niggers and the Indians from this day on. That's what Kent University was all about.
That was you young white kids' inauguration day. That was the day beyond a shadow of a doubt that you became the new nigger and the new Indian. And let me tell you, it really surprised us ex-niggers the way you slid into your nigger bag, Jim. Woo, you made worldwide news the first day. Nobody ever became a nigger and made news that quick, but the whole world knew you was a nigger. Now, briefly before I leave, let me explain something to you. You young white kids that don't believe you're the new nigger and the new Indian, let me beg you to listen to the radio talk shows and the television talk shows and listen to them discussing you today. It sounds like they used to discuss us in the 60s. What's wrong with them? What do they want? Who do they think they are? You can't understand nothing they're talking about. They look so funny and dirty. I ought to kill them all. So briefly before I leave, let me, an ex-nigger, explain to you new niggas what your duties is going to be about. Now there's a whole lots of niggas, but the most glorious nigger is what is known as a good nigger. A nigger that knows his place. A nigger that knows what his nigger duties is. And one duty, an important duty of being the nigger, is you get blamed for everything. Now don't talk about, we didn't do it, Jesus Christ, we didn't do it. Damn it, you did it. We got blamed for everything, we didn't complain. The biggest hurricane in the history of America, that come, what we gonna name it? Name it Beulah, them niggers. Big earthquake, what happened? Them niggas was throwing bricks on the ground. Let me explain how your nigger duties work when you get blamed for everything. Let's say tonight we will go to New York City to Kennedy Airport and we will take five old men, 90 years old, and we will fly them to Berkeley, California, and we'll let them five old men lay two sticks of dynamite around the town apiece, put them old men back on the plane, fly them back to New York City, and when them dynamite blasts go off in Berkeley, California, who gonna get blamed? Nigga, you. No investigation. Don't have to question who did it. The niggas did it. We got blamed for it. They just think they blamed us for relief. Yeah, you know it. I don't know why them old niggas always won't be on relief. You know damn good and well relief wasn't invented for us. Relief would have been for us. We would have had it in 1660 when we first got here. You didn't come up with a welfare system in America till 1930 when white folks got in trouble. And before Nixon get through with you, you're going to come up with another welfare system. But this one, they're going to blame on you. Now, after observing you new niggers, nigger, I don't believe your nigger duties is gonna be as demanding as ours. Your Indian duties gonna be a little tough, but you must remember, this is the first time in the history of America the nigger and the Indian had a daddy for the cowboy. Understand it now? But I know your nigger duties is not gonna be as demanding. We can tell that now. 1947, when we ex-niggers was deep into the nigger bag, we stand on the corner with the zoot suits. Y'all know about zoot suits, do you? You remember the zoot suits? Somebody told you about them, right? Yeah, they was in that nigger bag zoot suit, big old baggy pants and a shirt, sport coat that came down below our knees, and big old red shirt on, a green tie, and big old funny-looking hat and funny-looking hairdo, and standing on the corner talking loud and singing them old funky blues, and the great white father passed by and said, oh, look at them ignorant, uncouth animals, they ought to be in cages. We didn't say nothing. Now today, you new niggas is standing on the corner, them big old baggy pants on, funny-looking coat, hair looking all funny, standing there talking loud and singing that old hard rock, that same cowboy passed by and look at you and say, aren't they psychedelic? And so as I leave you today, let me briefly say to you, whenever you become the nigger and the Indian, the cowboy always have one fringe benefit, and that benefit is that all niggers and all Indians look alike. Now, this is very important for you new niggers to know, because it kept us black folks hung up, because we thought there was different degrees of niggers. We thought there was an educated nigger and a yellow nigger and a good nigger and a southern nigger and a northern nigger and a rich nigger and a left-wing nigger and a right. All niggers look alike. Now please understand that, so you can all get together and just be one big good nigger together. Yeah. Now, in case you don't believe all niggas look alike, just check the records out there in Santa Barbara, California, where they burnt the bank down last year, and they reopened the bank, and they tried to burn it down again. They killed that white kid in front of the bank. Remember that? What was he doing? He was trying to put the fire out. Remember? All niggas look alike. Kent University, they proved it. That one girl got shot through the head. She didn't have nothing to do with them demonstrations. She's walking across campus on the way to the parking lot to get in her car and drive home, and got shot dead through the head because all niggas look alike. And the only good nigger is a dead nigger. That one fella that got killed at Kent University proved to you all niggas look alike. He was an honor student in ROTC. Loved it. Loved it to death. So as I leave you today, I say you youngsters got a big job. One day you young folks are going to have to write the history of Kent University. Well, let's write it now. Short history. Kent, Ohio, Kent University, May the 4th, 1970. A group of soldiers moved upon the college campus. Some white folks decided the soldiers shouldn't be on the college campus, so they marched on the soldiers. They threw bricks and sticks at them. They didn't believe the soldiers would shoot. The soldiers shot, and four of them lay dead. Now, what are we gonna label this chapter? What are we gonna call it? Well, let's check the history book. They say history repeats itself. See if it ever happened before. Let's go back 100 years to 1870. No, maybe history don't repeat itself. So wait, let's go 200 years back to 1770. Well, I'll be damned. Son of a gun. 1770, Boston, Massachusetts, the British brought soldiers into Boston. Some white folks decided the British soldiers shouldn't be in Boston, so they marched on the Boston Commerce one night. They threw snowballs at the British soldiers. They didn't believe the British soldiers would shoot. The soldiers shot, and four of them lay dead. They call that the shot that was heard around the world. And from 1770 to 1776, this country went through some changes unparalleled in the history of America. I say to you youngsters today, got a big job. If we're not very careful, from 1970 to 1976, this country's gonna go through some more changes. Most of us old fools, we don't understand you young kids when you say, Mama America, you sick, Mama. We think it's because you don't like America. We don't understand that you're saying it because you love America. Just like you love your own mother. Say, Mama, don't go to work today. You sick, Mama. How you know I'm sick? I'm looking at you, Mama. Your breath smell all bad. Your eyes look all funny. Stuff running out your nose. I know you're sick. You stay in bed and get well so we can have a mother.
I'm going to work anyway.
Okay, Mama. That's the same thing you youngsters are saying to Mother America. Stay home, Mama. Get well. Get your right foot out of Cambodia. Bring your bad heart home from Vietnam and get your head out of Europe, Mama. Come on home and get well. And we keep asking you, how do you know Mother America's sick? You haven't been to med school. Well, you don't have to go to med school. It was a couple of groovy cats named Thomas Paine and Thomas Jefferson. And them cats, with all of their madness, they left a medical chart. They left a medical chart. It's called the United States Constitution. Anytime you want to know the health of Mother America, you just read the United States Constitution, because that's nothing more than Mama's health chart. And when you read the United States Constitution, that health chart tell you what Mother America's supposed to look like, act like, talk like, think like, and walk like when she's well. And if you read it good, you find out Mother America was sick before the ink dried on that document. I've been knowing for a long time Mother America was sick, but not until Kent University did I realize she's crazy too. The same guys that left the health chart also realized that if Mother America followed the path she started on, one day she'd reach a point of insanity where she'd become a detriment not only to herself but to her kids too. And so the same guys that left the health chart also left us a prescription. It's a simple prescription, didn't write it in Latin, it's in early English. The prescription tells you how you're supposed to deal with Mother America when she goes beyond the point of no return. Read that prescription one day. It's called the Declaration of Independence. It's a simple prescription. It reads, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by the Creator with certain unalienable rights, that when these rights are destroyed over long periods of time, it is your duty to destroy or abolish that government." Well, as I leave you, I say to you youngsters today, you got a big job, because we old fools have left you a mess to clean up. Got a lot of questions. And let me say to you, the job is so big simply because America is worth saving. At the expense of alienating your mama, your daddy, the president, and the vice president. There's nothing wrong with the United States Constitution that a little enforcement won't straighten out. You know, if a cat's been changing my dollar for 92 cents for 100 years, don't tell me there's something wrong with the dollar. I know there's something wrong with the man. You got a lot of questions you have to ask. And one important question you have to ask loud and clear, it's a simple question but an important question. And that question is, if democracy is as good as we tell you it is, then why in the hell are we running all over the world trying to ram it down people's throat with a gun? And the day you young folks make this Constitution work right, that's the day we can bring the guns home. The day you make this democracy work right, that's the day we can bring the guns home. Because you see anything good, you don't have to force on people. They will steal it. So I say to you youngsters, you got a big job. We left you a lot of problems. And I say to you today in America, young folks, the answer to the problems is do not lie in dynamite or shotguns. If you think the answer to the mentally insane is to get you some dynamite and slip up to the mental ward one night and blow up all the patients, then you're sicker than those folks laying inside in the bed. If you think the best way to deal with cancer is to kill the patient and not work with the germ, then you're in trouble. I hope you understand that. Your fellow brothers and sisters got killed at Kent University. The violence that was created in Chicago didn't affect nobody in Mississippi. The violence that was created in Georgia didn't affect nobody in New York City. If you youngsters would have been hip and wanted to deal with the National Guard, it was simple. All you had to do is call for a nationwide boycott of Christmas this year because of what happened at Kent University. And whenever Sears and Roebuck and Saks Fifth Avenue, debits and ledgers and profits and nonprofits decide on what a sick, degenerate National Guardman in Kent, Ohio will do, they will wipe out the National Guard for you. So as I leave you today, I say to you, understand your power. Let me briefly say to you young white kids in America, thank you for changing our civil rights movement into a human rights movement. Because of you, we're talking about our Indian brother today, our Puerto Rican brother, our Mexican brother, and our Asian American brother. You got a big job. You proved you can do it if you keep that moral force. You did it with the great boycott, the greatest victory ever been won in the history of America. Organized labor wasn't behind them. The old folks wasn't behind them. You young kids stood in front of your supermarket for 5 years with a quiet dignity and said, "Please, ma'am, don't buy California grapes." And it caught up with us.
than they wanted. And you fellas in the house, one night before you go to sleep, just lay in bed and close your eyes and think about all the women out here in the peace movement with us. And understand they're not out here, baby, because they weren't about going to Vietnam. And then visualize what would happen to the peace movement if all the women got out. We wouldn't have a peace movement. And somewhere, fellas, you got to say thanks to those ladies, and there's no better way of saying thanks to the women than getting behind the women's lib and making sure it becomes a reality, baby, not just another bullshit game. You got a big job. You ladies got a big job. You got a big job. You got to understand that nature puts you on the face of this earth as human beings first and women second. And damn it, you deserve all the courtesies that we give human beings first. Got a big, big job. There's not a woman alive today on the face of the earth in a position to get the world in World War III. Only men can get us in World War III. And after we started, we got to come back and get your babies to fight it. And you stupid enough to give them to us. Something's wrong. Something's wrong in the crib. You got to teach them babies in the crib that you're not raising murderers, you're raising helpers. And if they got to fill up every jail in the world to be a helper instead of a murderer, let us fill them up. The big job. And for those women in America that believe in war, let me tell you something. There's nowhere in the hell we men could carry them babies in our bellies for 9 months and spit them out and hug them and nurse them and feed them and listen to them talk when they can't talk but still understand what they're saying and get them all the way up to manhood, and then you women get a war going and come back and get our babies. Never happened. And if you don't believe it, you women get a bill pushed through that's saying next month all the men in America got to send their hunting dogs to Vietnam. It'd be a shootout in the front line. It sounds funny, but it's very sad when you stop and think if we got you women in such a trick that we would fight harder over keeping our dogs home from Vietnam than you'll fight to keep your babies home from Vietnam. Got a big job. Thank you. God bless you. Nature, have fun. Peace and freedom.